Welcome to Easter Sunday, the best day of the year, the day when we celebrate the resurrection. We're so glad you decided to join us. This year, the idea of resurrection holds more potency than the average year, as we feel new life coming not only with the warm air after the wicked storm this past week, but also the potential of coming out of a long year of pandemic. We have lots to celebrate this year and lots to hope for. New life is coming. One of the ways that the church has celebrated Easter in the past is by saying the following words when we meet one another on Easter morning. Christ has risen, and with the reply, he has risen indeed. And so before we jump into our Easter sermon this morning, let's take a moment and greet the members of your household with that greeting. Or go ahead and announce it in the chat. It's okay if it's a little disorganized. That's part of the celebration. Christ has risen.
Early in the morning, on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb and saw that the stone was moved away from the entrance. She ran at once to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one Jesus loved, gasping for breath. They took the master from the tomb. We don't know where they put him. Peter and the other disciple left immediately for the tomb. They ran neck and neck. The other disciple got to the tomb first, outrunning Peter. Stooping to look in, he saw the pieces of linen cloth lying there, but he didn't go in. Simon Peter arrived after him, entered the tomb, observed the linen cloths lying there and the kerchiefs used to cover his head not lined with the linen clothes, but separate, neatly folded by itself.
But Mary stood outside the tomb weeping. As she wept, she knelt to look into the tomb and saw two angels sitting there, dressed in white, one at the head, the other at the foot of where Jesus' body had been laid. They said to her, "Woman, why do you weep?" "They took my master," she said, "and I don't know where they put him." After she said this, she turned away and saw Jesus standing there, but she didn't recognize him.
Sigurd Koder was a Catholic German painter and priest. Born in the early 20th century in Germany, he fought in the Second World War, spending most of it as a prisoner in France after being sent to the front lines. And when he returned home, he studied art and worked as a silversmith and eventually trained to become a priest. And it's clear from his paintings that he was very familiar with death. His paintings often bring the story of Jesus and Koder's own experience with death and suffering together. Most of his paintings center around the life of Jesus, and often you see hidden in them the dates of wars like World War II and the Vietnam War. Sometimes there are Nazi symbols or German World War II helmets, and every relic and remain is subverted by and held in the light of Jesus' presence. His paintings are at the same time delightful and haunting. There's whimsy in them, but there's also gravity. And he painted the scene that we're reading from in the book of John this morning, the scene of Mary Magdalene at the tomb of Jesus on the very first Easter morning. Have a good look at that painting. Take a minute. What do you notice first? The first thing I notice is Mary. See what I mean by whimsy? She looks a little like she was drawn by a child. There's innocence in the way that she's depicted. Look at her hands. They're like kind of chunky, and her arms are a little long and out of proportion. I have always been drawn in by the people in Koder's paintings because the fact that they are a little off kilter or childlike drops my defenses. At first glance, I'm fooled into thinking that the painting is simple and clear and the subject matter light until I take a closer look. Have a look at Mary's face. What do you see? She looks sad, doesn't she? Look at her eyes, and her arm is up at her forehead like she's distressed and might have just been covering her face or maybe wiping tears away. Where is she? Well, she's kneeling at a grave. See, to the right, there's a gravestone that says Jesus of Nazareth, and it's pulled back from the top of the grave, revealing a deep, dark hole. And if we look a little further back into the painting, we see that the immediate background is dark and foreboding. Do you see the German helmet? Or that round object that looks like a mummy's head? Let's take one more look. But this time, pull back for a wide angle shot. First we see Mary, and then there's the gloom of the graveyard in which she kneels. But what's behind that? What else is there? The back wall, broken in two. It looks like a skull. Kids, some of you ripped a curtain in two this weekend as part of the Easter activity bags. And here's another thing broken in two. Now notice the sunrise and the flash of color with the flowers blooming in the graveyard. Can you see it all now? When we look closely at this picture, there are clues that there is more going on than what we saw at first glance. And in John 20, we're given a similar picture. John was written later than the other Gospels, and so he had time to sit and think about the life of Jesus, to learn and pray. And he clearly loves his art. When John writes or paints his picture, he is careful about what he says. He's like a novelist weighing his words. Every stroke of ink holds hints and clues, inviting people to go beyond what happened and to consider why it happened. And if we read carefully, we realize that what appears to be happening right on the surface might not actually be what's going on. Everything is being flipped on its head. And our first clue is the way that John begins this chapter. Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark. Where have we heard words like these before? In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth, darkness covered the face of the deep. And there was evening and there was morning, the first day. In the first words of this chapter, we hear echoes of Genesis, the echoes of creation. The world has been plunged into darkness for the people who loved and followed Jesus, and everything feels lost and chaos covers their world. And when they show up on the first day of the week under the cover of darkness to the place of death, to the graveside of their dear friend, it feels like things have gotten even darker. The gravestone has been moved away and the body is gone. Everything is lost, including their beloved Jesus. And yet, remember the painting? The sun is rising in the background. A new day is dawning. Something new is happening. And there are other clues that something else is going on here. When the disciples go into the tomb, they see the linen wrappings laying there, and the cloth that had been on Jesus' head was tidily folded and laying in the corner. Now, the assumption when Jesus' body was gone would have been that grave robbers had come and taken it. But the grave is not tossed like it should have been had robbers been there. And anyway, who takes grave clothes off a body in order to steal it? And then takes the time to tidily fold the head covering and lay it in the corner? You see, again, John is drawing our attention back to another story, the story of Lazarus. In John 11, it says this, "So Jesus, again being deeply moved within, came to the tomb. Now, it was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. And Jesus said, 'Remove the stone.' And he cried out with a loud voice, 'Lazarus, come out.' And out came the man who had died, bound hand and foot with wrappings, and his face was wrapped around with a cloth. And Jesus said to them, 'Unbind him and let him go.'" When Lazarus was raised from the dead, he came out of the grave in his grave clothes. He had to be unwrapped like a mummy or a baby swaddled like a burrito in a blanket. But in Jesus' case, the grave clothes lay there like a balloon emptied of air, deflated, like a seed casing out of which a plant had burst. John is saying, pay attention. something like the raising of Lazarus is happening, but it's also fundamentally different. There are so many clues that something more is going on here than what we first thought, what we first saw. This isn't just the scene of a woman crying at the graveside of someone she's lost. But we're getting ahead of ourselves, because even though there's more going on than a woman crying at a graveside, there is, in fact, a woman crying at a graveside. And so we have to consider what first caught our eye in that painting and what we first see when we read John 20. We can't speed past that, or we miss an essential part of the story. And what we first see is Mary kneeling at the open tomb, the sadness of her face, the placement of her arm. This is where the story starts. It starts when it was still dark. It starts with death. It starts with loss. It starts in a graveyard by the edge of a tomb. So let's start there too. Let's start with Mary, because we have to start with where we're at. And where we're at in this story is beside a grave. And this Easter morning, you are here with us, but you also are where you're at. And a lot of us, after this long year, also feel like we are in the middle of a graveyard, in the middle of loss. So let's not jump ahead too quickly. Let's listen to the words of the angels to Mary. Woman, why are you weeping? And let's hear the words of Mary in reply. They took my master, and I don't know where they put him. Let's hear this question for ourselves right where we're at, and then let's answer it for ourselves. Why are you weeping? What has been taken from you this year? What have you lost? What gravestones are you staring at? The dates of a life come and gone, etched on the stone. Where is the chaos of darkness? The place where it feels like all is lost. The place where it feels like creation has completely unraveled. Where does it feel like Jesus has absolutely disappeared? Be where you are. There's room in this story for that. In fact, that's where this story starts. So take your time. Where you are is exactly where you should be. Because before there's new creation, there's darkness. And before there's resurrection, there's a dead body. Except, wait, there is no body. And that is the problem. Where the flip is Jesus.
Christ has died. Christ has risen.
Christ has come again.
To shake. to shake. The storm was rolled away. His perfect life could not be overcome. Now death, where is your sting? Our resurrected King has rendered you defeated. Forever he is glorified. Forever he is lifted high. Forever he is risen. He is alive. He is alive.
After she said this, she turned away and saw Jesus standing there, but she didn't recognize him.
Jesus spoke to her, "Woman, why do you weep? Who are you looking for?"
She, thinking that he was the gardener, said, "Sir, if you took him, tell me where you put him so that I can care for him."
Jesus said, "Mary," turning to face him. She said in Hebrew, "Rabboni," meaning teacher.
Coder has a unique perspective when he paints. I have a print of a painting he did of the Last Supper, and when you look at it, you see the disciples gathered around you, and right in front of you is the cup. It's almost like you're holding it. You can't see Jesus in the painting because it is painted from the perspective of Jesus. He is outside of the frame, looking in. It's as though Jesus is painting what he's seeing, or as though Jesus is pointed a camera and took a picture. You can see the reflection of his face in the wine, in the goblet, but you cannot see him. In another of Seeker's paintings, the perspective is the perspective of Jesus as he washes the disciples' feet. Again, you see his reflection in the water, but you don't see his face. It's his viewpoint from which you're seeing the scene. Now, I've had this print of Mary Magdalene hanging in my office for years. And last week was the first time that I made the connection to perspective. I have looked at it and considered the clues and pored over the details and colors, trying to find meaning and discover what it was saying about hope, trying to find where Jesus was in the painting. And it wasn't until last week that I realized the answer to my search was outside of the frame. You see, Coder is capturing here the moment when Mary turns away from the angels, turns away from the tomb to look at something behind her that has caught her attention. It says in John, she turned and saw him. Just like Coder's other paintings, we are seeing this scene through the eyes of Jesus. Jesus does not appear in the painting because we're seeing the graveyard from Jesus's point of view. Holy flipped perspective. I did not need to pore over the details to find clues as to where Jesus was. I needed my perspective to shift. And so did Mary. Mary is looking into the tomb. She's looking for Jesus. Where have they put him? The grave clothes are just there, and then there's the angels. And can I point out that she doesn't even seem to care that there are angels there? And this is all because what she wants to know is, where is Jesus? And then something draws her attention away from the tomb. In my imagination, it's the crack of a twig or a movement that catches her eye. Perhaps the sun has come up just enough so that what wasn't visible a few minutes ago is now. And she turns to see who she thinks is the gardener. And again, she is asked that question. Woman, why do you weep? With this beautiful irony, she tells Jesus that if he tells her where his body is, she will carry it away. She asks him the location of his own body when the one she's looking for stands right in front of her. And then with one word, the veil lifts from her eyes and she sees that this is not just the gardener. Jesus says her name, Mary. And in this moment, her perspective and ours starts to shift because we see where the clues have been leading us. This is indeed the first day of new creation. In the middle of the old world, where death has the last word, a new kind of reality is taking hold. The sun has risen. Jesus, who was dead yesterday, is alive today. Something new is happening in the middle of this death scene where she was expecting to find a body. Mary is found by the risen Jesus. Just as Lazarus was raised, so Jesus has been raised. But there is something essentially different about what is taking place. Lazarus came out in his grave clothes, which means he was raised to a life that he had to die from again. But Jesus, like the seed bursting out of its seed coat, has burst the confines of death. He has burst the boundaries of mortality with immortality. And this is what the grave clothes left behind mean. He has gone through death and come out the other side. He has not just come back from death. He will not die again. And like the linens left in the grave, he has left death behind. Where have they put him? Where is Jesus? He is right there in the place where it feels like everything has been taken, where it feels like all is lost. And he is alive. On this first day of the week, the first day of new creation, as the sun comes up, Mary has seen the empty grave clothes. She has come face to face with angels, but ultimately, Mary has come face to face with the gardener. Do you hear another clue here? Woman, garden, death. When the woman saw that the tree looked like good eating and realized what she would get out of it, she'd know everything. She took and ate the fruit and then gave some to her husband, and he ate. And immediately the two of them did see what was really going on. They saw themselves naked. They sewed fig leaves together as makeshift clothes for themselves. And when they heard the sound of God strolling in the garden in the evening breeze, the man and his wife hid in the trees of the garden. They hid from God. In this garden of tombs, we see another game of hide and seek play out between humanity and God. Only this time, the woman is not hiding, she is seeking. But in the middle of her seeking, what Mary discovers is that she has, in a gracious twist, been found in the middle of the place where it feels like all has been lost. I do not know how to adequately express how beautiful this moment is, how tender and personal, and yet how cosmic. Jesus is alive. Desperate looking for him, she finds instead that she has been found. Love has overcome. So, what are you looking for? What is it that you have lost that you are trying to get back? What is it that has been taken from you that you want to retrieve? What are you trying to find? Who or what are you looking for in your game of hide and seek? What answers are you searching for that you think will make sense of the chaos? Could I suggest that what or who you are looking for has already found you? That beyond the questions and beyond the desire to recapture what we have lost, there is in us the ancient longing to be found by God, the longing to hear our name spoken. Jesus' resurrected presence with Mary is the revelation that nothing that we have lost, no question that we have, no darkness, no chaos, not even death, can keep us from being found. In the cosmic game of hide and seek, God is always it, and he always wins. Where is Jesus? The great flipping news is that the one Mary was seeking and the one we seek has already found us.
Christ has risen. Christ has risen.
Christ will come.
Again.
Again.
shall come, the trumpet's down. Oh, may I then in him be found. Just in his righteousness alone, flawless and before Christ.
Jesus said, don't cling to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. Go to my brothers and tell them, I ascend to my Father and your Father, my God and your God. Mary Magdalene went telling the news to the disciples. I saw the Master, and she told them everything he said to her.
John 20, 17 and 18.
I can imagine that when Mary's eyes were opened and she saw Jesus for who he was, that she ran to him and hugged him. I can imagine her clutching him and wanting to hang on. And I imagine her wanting him to take her wherever he was going next so that she didn't have to go looking for him again. Like us, Mary wanted back what she had. Jesus with her in his body, preaching and teaching and healing. And for a moment, she thinks that she has back which she has lost. But then Jesus says these words to her, don't cling to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. Go to my brothers and tell them, I ascend to my Father and your Father, my God and your God. Notice the inclusive pronouns Jesus uses here. Go to my brothers, to my Father, but also to your Father, to my God, but also to your God. Jesus is making a statement here about what's happened in the resurrection. There is now a new kind of relationship available to Jesus' disciples. They are invited not just to follow Jesus, but to be alongside Jesus. They are being included, invited shoulder to shoulder with Jesus, participants in a new kind of life. They are brothers and sisters with Jesus, and they are children of God. Let's go back to our painting. When we look at the painting, whose perspective are we seeing it from? Jesus, right? And I think that perspective offers us the same invitation as the words of Jesus to Mary. The painting is not only telling us something about where Jesus is, it is also inviting us to consider what it means to be shoulder to shoulder with Jesus, to see the world from his point of view through the eyes of resurrection. You see, Jesus' resurrection was the beginning of something, not the end of something. It was the start of a new creation in the middle of the old one. The Jews believed that this kind of resurrection, a resurrection to eternal life, would happen. But they believed that it would happen at the end of time, not in the middle of time. And when it happened, it would include everything, not just parts of creation. And so when Jesus shows up resurrected, this is a sign that what was supposed to happen at the end of time is happening now. A new creation has started. Jesus' resurrection is revealing that eternal resurrected life is a reality now. What happens to us when we die is just an extension of the life that Jesus has started in the middle of this life. Resurrection is happening right here in the places where death seems to have the last word. Look one more time at the painting. Do you see the blossoms of red flowers in the middle of the graveyard? In the place of death, new life is coming. Something new is blooming. Anyone peeking under their mulch these days to see if the tulips are starting to poke through? From our vantage point, shoulder to shoulder with Jesus, our job is not to turn away from the places of death, but to witness the signs of life in the midst of them, and then to tend to them. Our job is to notice and live the resurrected life that Jesus has started. And the first step to becoming resurrected people is to let go. Jesus says, Mary, do not cling. He is inviting her to accept the challenge of this new life, this new way of being in the world. It isn't going to be like the old life. A new thing is happening, but it means that she has to let go of the old. Parker Palmer calls this the threat of resurrection. This new life of resurrection will threaten the past. It will threaten our comfort. It will ask us to let go of what we've clung to, and it will ask us to die to what we think brings security and control and recognition. So, this Easter Day, 2021, what is it that you need to let go of? What have you been clinging to? Consider what COVID has taken from us. We're a year in and some of us have been vaccinated and winter is over. The snow is melted and the water is starting to flow and it's almost time to watch for the pelicans. It feels like in a very real way, resurrection is coming, but life will never be the same and we can't expect that it will be. The pre-COVID world is over and done. We cannot cling to it. Clinging to it will keep us from moving into a new life. So, whatever you named as that thing you lost when you knelt by the grave with Mary, can you release it so that you can move into whatever new life Jesus is inviting you to? Can we let go of our expectations of life in order to receive what's being given to us? Can we let go of how things used to be? Can we let go of our fear of the unknown, our fear of what we cannot control? Can we accept the challenge of resurrection? One of the best ways to let go of that to which we cling is to look for signs of new life. See, our job, our call as people of the resurrection is to look for the blooms of red in the middle of the gloom. There is nothing fragile about resurrected life. It's happening everywhere, all the time, because Jesus started something eternal and relentless with his resurrection. This new life will keep blooming in all of the deaths we experience, right until our last death, when our whole selves will be resurrected. Right until the end of time, when everything will be caught up in the new creation. In the meantime, signs of life are everywhere. So, this Easter day, here's your spiritual practice. Look for signs of life. Look for the blooms. Go today with your perspective shifted because you have been found by the resurrected one.
Christ has died. Christ has risen. Christ will come again.
Empty praise, treasures of faith, never enough. back together. Every desire is now satisfied. We're hearing your love. Oh, there's nothing better than you. Oh, there's nothing better than you, Lord. There's nothing. Nothing is better than you. Oh, I'm not. Failures and flaws, if you see them all, you still come prepared. It's the God of the mountain, it's the God of the valley. There's not a place in mercy and grace will find me again. Better than you, Lord, there's nothing better than you, Lord, there's nothing. Nothing is better than you. Oh, there's nothing better than you. Oh, there's nothing better than you, Lord, there's nothing. Nothing is better than you. To dancing, you give beauty for ashes, you turn shame into glory, you're the only one who can, you're the only one who can, you turn grace into God. There's nothing better than you. There's nothing better than you. There's nothing. Nothing is better than you. You turn graves into gardens. Turn bones into armies. You turn seas into highways. You're the only one who can. You're the only one who can. You're the only one who can.
Thanks for joining us this Resurrection Sunday. We hope the celebration has filled you with joy, hope, and resurrection energy. If you'd like to support the good work that's happening at Lakeview, a give button is going to show up in the chat. We appreciate your generosity. If you would like to continue learning more about who Jesus is and exploring the significance of his resurrection, we invite you to join us for an 8-week experience called Alpha. Alpha is a safe space to ask big questions about life and spirituality. If you're new to the Christian faith, Alpha is a great opportunity to learn more. And for those of you who've been on this journey for a while, consider inviting someone in your world who has questions about God and faith to join in. Alpha begins on April 15th, and you can click the button in the chat to register. Thanks again for being with us this morning. May the signs of resurrection life be bountiful in your life. And may your eyes be open to the ways that new life new creation is unfolding.